podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX, Inc., and that's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C. And PAX, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, the codes of conduct, how to contact people in the organization, how to become a member or donate, how to, now they have a tab that says the sports package. So, if you're into the sports now, go ahead and click on that sports package, specifically track, because it got one of the meanest track sprint coaches this side of the Mississippi. So go ahead and check that out. And you can learn how to get involved and hover your mouse over that more tab. You see that learning center tab pop up, bam, hover your mouse over that, bam, some more stuff come up, bam, and you in there. Just visit www.pactsinc.org, and that way you could be cool like me and Pat. Ain't that right, Pat?
Word. You sound like you looking at it right now.
Yeah, I am. I got it. See how I got excited? Hey, man, sports package, man. Getting it in. See, that's a new, because, you know, I've done this a million times, and so now when they hear the intro this time, like, ooh, sports package. So they're going to go look.
Yeah, they're going to be like, oh, that's new.
Right.
I'm with you.
So go down, man. But how everything been since last week? You know, we ain't podcasting in a week, so what's been going down?
What you talking about, we ain't podcasting in a week? We did the interview last week.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's been, well, I say the country.
Yeah, week.
It's been a week. It's been a week. I'm sorry. Let me use my correct English. It's been a week, Patrick.
Nah, man, you know, it's been cool, actually, you know. I done had a lot to be excited about. So it's been a good week as far as, like, family and recreation and stuff. So I can't complain.
That's what's up. I want to give a shout-out to Enigma September for having me on his podcast Friday. We wild out. Like, yeah, we had a good time. We wild
oh,
out.
Yeah. I caught that show. That was a funny show. That was a good show. Yo, how y'all bag on me the entire show? Like, I ain't catch the beginning, but I went, you know, I got to listen to it, and I was like, yo, they opening credits. Like, before Enigma even say anything, here come Joe. Very first thing you hear, ain't nobody worried about Pat. Wait a second.
Hey, well, I figured why not take the opportunity, so I did. I'm like, man, let's go in, because I like, well, Pat always cracking on me, so. I'm going to take the opportunity to talk about him behind his back, but actually in his face, because he's going to watch it. So it's simultaneous.
Yeah, and I noticed that, and let me explain to everybody, and Enigma can hear this too if he listened back to this show. I don't know if he listened to every
he
show.
He will. He listened to it. He will.
So the deal with iHeartRadio is that when iHeartRadio launched their podcasting service, because they launched it a couple years ago, and we've been podcasting for a long time. Mm-hmm. So they took all of their podcasts from the iTunes directory, and we were already in there. His show hadn't started yet. So that's what happened. That's why his show didn't get carried over like all of the rest of the shows, was because like he was the last show we added. So I had to submit his show separately, and we just been waiting on approval from them for the last few weeks, really. Maybe it's
Now you said that Friday. You explained. So yeah, he was just they were just messing with you going in.
Enigma
was going in on both of us. So.
No, it's cool. It was cool. I just wanted to explain. And, you know, for all you people out there in podcast world, you know, it's a process getting your shows everywhere. But make sure that you go through that process. Because there are some places like Spotify, they didn't pull from nothing. So the only way to get your show on Spotify was to submit. And there have been a couple other networks that are like, you know, we don't pull from nobody. If you want your show up on our thing, then you got to submit to us. So it's a process, though. Every now and then I miss somebody and I get, you know, I get chin checked by somebody. Usually not by y'all, usually by somebody who's looking for one of the shows. And I'm like, yo, well, why can't you find it? And they're like, oh, I listened to it through this obscure podcast directory that I've never heard of in my life. And it's like, all right, well, I'll submit us over there. So.
Well, there it is. Well, thank you for listening, person. All you mystery people out there, thank you for listening and introducing us to new podcast directories. And y'all keep Pat on his toes.
Hey, man, enough is enough. We listed in like, we listed in a couple hundred at this point. Like, go find one of them.
Hey, man, and make sure you download your episode.
Yeah, you know what? Y'all ain't even got to go to all those directories. We got our own Freedom Train app, especially for those of you on Android.
Straight up,
go
man.
Download the app.
Go download the app or go to the website.
You know, or go to the website, right.
Either way, you know, just make it easy on yourself.
Go to Facebook. Follow the Freedom Train Radio Facebook page, and you'll get, you know, every time we put a show out, the Facebook page is updated. So
it is. It stays updated, so they straight.
Right. So, y'all, so stop finding these brand-new mom-and-pop podcast directories, man.
That's all right. If you want to be somebody, you want to go somewhere.
You better
wake up and pay attention. Yeah. And so, yeah, like we said, shout out to Enigma. I want to give a shout out to the Linked Up crew. We got up together this weekend and was able to serve the kids in the community Friday and Saturday and Sunday. Friday, it was a meetup. We wanted to have more kids there. I wasn't there Friday, but they wanted to have more kids there. But they was able to fellowship with some adults and get more ideas and things on the table. Saturday, we was able to serve the kids in Joe Lewis, which is on the north side of town. Sunday, did the pool party cookout at Southside Park. So we were able to catch the kids and the projects on both ends of town. And we had a good time with the kids, man. So shout out to the Linked Up clip. We out here. So, what are we talking about today, Pat?
Oh, I got one more announcement real quick.
Go ahead.
Never mind.
Right.
I'll do it on Lessons from the Screen.
There you go. He gonna tell y'all, you better wake up. All right, so today we got four topics for y'all. So, there's a multi-drug-resistant strand of malaria that spread through parasites that's running rampant. Well, I ain't going to say running rampant, but it's spreading through Asia. And it's feared that it could go international. So we'll talk about that. The next story is there's a black 10-year-old little boy who's been charged with assault after allegedly hitting, because the article don't ever open up and say the black boy hit him, but the white boy got hit in the head a couple times during a dodgeball game, and the black boy's being charged. We're going to talk about that. This story made me mad. A 7-year-old girl was medically kidnapped. The young girl was born, had some birth defects. So she was medically kidnapped by the state of Kentucky foster care system, and she died in foster care. So the mother is definitely trying to reach out and get some help on this. I learned about this story. I haven't talked to the mother. I don't know the mother at all, but I just felt like it's something we want to talk about. Well, we're going to talk about it today, but if we can't get the mother on, we will, to help spread the message and get more information to try to help out. And the last story we're talking about is white boys striking again. 3 dead and 12 wounded after a mass shooting at a garlic festival in California. So if you haven't heard this headline, I'm not making this up. It's the Gilroy Garlic Festival in California. Some little white boy shot it up. So we're going to talk about that. So let's start at the top with this multi-drug-resistant strand of malaria that is going through Asia. So I'm going to read this little summary real quick, but I have this whole, article that's giving information about this. But I'm going to read this little summary for you. So it says, genomic surveillance has revealed that malaria resistance to two first-line anti-malaria drugs has spread rapidly from Cambodia to neighboring countries in Southeast Asia. Researchers discovered that descendants of one multi-drug-resistant malaria strand are replacing the local parasites in Vietnam, Laos, and northeastern Thailand, and are picking up additional new genetic changes which could further enhance resistance. The study reveals the importance of ongoing genomic surveillance and malaria control strategies. So that's like a little summary of the whole article that's going on. But basically, there's a new species of parasites that's showing up in Southeast Asia. Those parasites are replacing the normal parasites who would spread malaria, but the parasites and the malaria are resistance to a lot of the drugs that would be normally used to fight malaria and or fight parasites. So let me read this part to you. Malaria is caused by Plasmodium parasites, which are spread through mosquito bites. The World Health Organization estimates that nearly 220 million people were infected in 2017, causing at least 400,000 deaths, with children under the age of 5 in sub-Saharan Africa at most risk. Malaria can be threatened when caught early enough, but the parasites is becoming resistant to anti-malarial drugs in many areas, especially Southeast Asia, putting elimination efforts at risk. Over the last decade, the first-line treatment for malaria in many areas of Asia has been a combination of two powerful anti-malarial drugs. I can't say these things, but they call them DHA and PPQ. So that's what we're going to call them, DHA and PPQ. It says, however, a previous study identified a strand of malaria that had become resistant to this treatment. Research found that this resistant strain, is named KEL1-PLA1 because of this combination of genetic mutations that causes resistance, and that spread across Cambodia under the radar between 2007 and 2013. And I'm just reading these two parts, and then we're going to get into it. But this highlighted an urgent need to follow up and determine how far the resistance had then spread and if it had evolved even further, and eventually understand which drugs would work against current malaria parasites in Southeast Asia. The most up-to-date and comprehensive whole genome study of malaria parasites in Southeast Asia, the team sequenced and analyzed the DNA of 1,673 Plasmodium falciparum parasites taken from the blood of malaria patients between 2008 and 2018. The analysis focused on the KEL1 and the PLA1 gene variants revealed that the situation had gotten much worse after 2013. The multi-drug resistance KEL1 and PLA1 parasites have spread internationally in some regions, making up more than 80% of the parasites analyzed. So, I know this is a new story to both of us, and I know, you know, we both have had time to find some information on it. So what kind of information did you find, and what are your thoughts on this?
Well, my thoughts on it goes back to what we talked about a couple shows ago about HIV and about the show I did on the book. I forget the name of the book now. Bottle of Lies is what it was called. And basically, that deals with the resistance component of it, why these parasites are becoming resistant to the drugs. And one of the cases, one of the things that I bring up again is the quality of the drugs being used to treat the disease. Malaria is a disease caused by a parasite that frequently exists in the mosquitoes in hot and humid regions in Africa and various other places in Southeast Asia.
Right.
And in those areas, you have a lot of bad actors in the pharmaceutical industry. You have a lot of bad actors in the generic pharmaceutical industry as well. And all of that meshes together to mean that these people get lower quality medications. And what happens when somebody gets lower quality medications is that the medication doesn't do a thorough enough job in eradicating the parasites or the bacteria that it's supposed to eradicate. And it leaves bacteria or parasites alive after exposure, allowing those parasites or bacteria to develop immunity and resistance to the to the treatment. And that's why we're seeing all of these treatment-resistant bacteria and parasites arising in these impoverished communities. It's not that these disease-causing agents are just so superior because they're on another continent or anything like that. In my opinion, and based on everything that I've read and researched, a part of that is a direct reflection of the quality of the medication that those people are getting. It's substandard. It's not doing
right.
an appropriate job. And so that's one frustration with this, is that we sit in our little bubbles in America confident and content that we don't have to deal with these problems until these problems show up. And now they've been built and exposed to so many different agents and treatments and chemicals that what we thought was going to work for us no longer works for us. And so then you have a serious epidemic on your hand, a global crisis that the world is really going to be concerned about, because developed Western nations are going to be at the mercy of these diseases, especially when you equate global warming into it and how it's staying hotter longer. So mosquitoes are around longer. They're able to spread further. You know what I mean? So you just get into this whole area where it's just frustrating, because you can see how this relates to that, which causes this, which could potentially lead to that, but nobody cares because it's not here yet, even though it's coming.
Yeah, people do have to worry about this on a global scale, and that's one of the reasons. I was watching something with black people. Oh, Sway in the Morning. I was watching Dr. Sadie's family interview on Sway in the Morning, and the lady Tracy G, she talked about this. And so that's why I kind of started reading about it, and I was like, man, maybe we should bring this up, because with like you said, global warming and all these different other elemental factors that could go into these parasites. And they're already talking about the mutation of it. What was I just read? It says, the researchers discovered that not only has this resistant strand spread geographically, but it had evolved and picked up new mutations in the chloroquine-resistance transporter gene. These parasites had then rapidly spread across borders. A related paper on clinical outcomes published today in The Lancet Infectious Disease revealed that the CRT, which is the chloroquine resistance transporter gene, that's the CRT. It says the diseases revealed that CRT mutations were associated with complete treatment failure of the types of malaria, basically. This supported the finding that the resistance had not only spread but worsened as the parasite evolved under further drug pressure. So, like you're saying, it's basically backing up what you're saying. Like, the more they try to fight it the way they usually fight it, the more parasite evolves. But our immune systems in this westernized world are maybe stronger but weaker. Because, and I think that's the same for everybody everywhere. Because We are used to our environments and what's in our environments. And when you introduce foreign things into our environments, like these parasites, and it's going to cause an issue because you can see what's going on over in Asia. Basically, something foreign was introduced in these environments. Now, we may have the technology to combat these earlier in America as a whole, as a whole nation. But when we start talking about individual people and things like that, even in Africa, we know there are places in Africa that have the infrastructure to deal with it and some that don't. So these are things that we have to start thinking about. But once again, this is us coming to you all from an environmental standpoint and hopefully getting the message across. So hopefully we're doing that this fight against tyranny and all these other things is also including the environment, and we have to make sure we are, one, aware of what's going on, and two, being in the right mind to combat what's going on, because this could threaten our future. People could die in mass. Like, these goddamn things are mutating like a motherfucker.
But, you know, that goes back to what's causing the mutations is exposure to...
Right, to the medicines.
Right, to insufficient quantities and quality of medicine. Because if they were giving these people medicine in proper doses, it would kill the virus, or it would at least make the virus weak enough that the body would eradicate the virus. And in those situations, in a total destructive environment, there are no parasites or bacteria left alive to mutate. But when you give somebody poor quality drugs and it doesn't do the job sufficiently, you leave stuff around to learn and adapt to the environment you just put it through, so that now even when you give it at a proper dose, it's still not going to work because the pathogen has adapted to the environment that you're creating through the use of medication. So this is one of those things where, for me, it goes back to we need to take everything seriously. I mean, I think there were 219 million cases of malaria last year, or the year before last, one of those. That's an astoundingly large number of people. But here in America, we don't care because most of those people are in Southeast Asia and Africa. So
right,
we're not concerned. But, you know, you start thinking about, again, we'll go back into
travels.
Right, it travels. People are, the globe is getting smaller in the sense that people are visiting places that they weren't able to visit before. You're talking about, even when we go into, Joe, you and I were talking about this not too long ago, the spread of something at like bed bugs, which 20, 30, yeah, 30, 40 years ago, nobody was considering bed bugs to be an American problem. It was a third world problem that existed in other countries. Nowadays in America, there's a growing bed bug epidemic because people are traveling to other countries and bringing stuff back with them. So somebody travels to malaria or to one of these countries, the Congo, India, Mozambique, somewhere. They get bitten by a female mosquito that carries the malaria, one of the malaria parasites. It takes anywhere from a week to a couple months to maybe even a full year, according to some of the things I was reading, after you've been bitten, for symptoms to show up. So that person's back home living their best life, you know, doing what they do. And then all of a sudden they come down, they're sick. Now, over the course of the time that they've been here and symptoms didn't show up, and even after symptoms showed up, malaria symptoms can oftentimes look like a cold or the flu. So how many people have been infected with malaria in that time frame? You know, all it's going to take, and now it might be nowadays we might be able to just, you know, you get real sick, you don't get better, because, you know, in a lot of cases, the body can resist the malaria virus or the malaria parasites long enough to develop a natural sense of immunity, at which case it'll develop into a milder form of the disease that it is, and you just live with it not realizing you have malaria. And in some cases, that happens. But in other cases, it gets worse and worse and worse. You go to the hospital, oh, you got malaria, they give you treatment, boom, 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 2 weeks, you good. What happens if, oh, you got malaria, boom, 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 they give you treatment, you don't get better. You still got malaria.
Right. But boom, this, boom, boom, this boom, is not you know? Your, this is not your grandfather's malaria, though. And
right.
that goes to what you're talking about because, like, look, check this out. It says, because this article is great in describing. It's saying Professor Olivo Miotto, a senior author from the Wellcome Sanger Institute, Big Data Institute at the University of Oxford, and Mahidol University in Bangkok, said the speed at which these resistant malaria parasites have spread in Southeast Asia is very worrying. Other drugs may be effective at the moment, but the situation is extremely fragile, and this study highlights that urgent action is needed to eliminate parasites from the greater Mekong sub-region to prevent them from spreading and evolving further. Because these things are they like super parasites or something. It's, like this part says, this is a quote from Dr. Michael Chu. It's saying the spread of drug-resistant strains is demonstrated by this important genetic surveillance, building upon previous research, provides a warning signal. It serves as a reminder that we must not show complacency with the response to malaria. It also shows that we have the tools to effectively track drug resistance across borders, which can be used to inform coordinated elimination and control efforts. But they understand that these things are, like we said earlier, they're mutating because of the drugs that they are giving. So the drugs are not working to stop them, that they were giving them, because they were treating it like it was regular malaria. So now that we know this is not your grandfather's malaria parasites, they have to do new things. But we're also talking about starting at the top and coming down. So if you in poor areas, you're going to get yours last.
Right. Right. And we gotta look at, malaria is a deadly disease, but it's most deadly to the same thing that everything is most deadly to. Women are pregnant women, infants, and young children. And even for the young children and the infants that don't die from malaria, they still run the risk of permanent, lifelong learning disabilities and mental illnesses because the malaria, in some cases, the parasites, work their way into the blood cells that provide oxygen and sustenance to the brain, and they block those cells off totally, which means there are components to the child's brain that aren't getting blood. So, you know, that this is stuff that, look, you know, we had an ALS challenge in America for a disease, and this is not to you know, cast any disparaging light on anybody with ALS. Or anybody that donated to ALS. But just keep it in perspective, we had an ALS challenge here in America for a disease that predominantly affects middle-aged white men. But we're also passive and nonchalant about a disease that's killing off babies and young children and negatively impacting on a severe level pregnant women and their growing fetuses and black and brown countries all over the world. Like, if you got money to give to ALS, you got money to give to people that are suffering from malaria.
Yeah. I mean, people pick and choose what they want to donate to and what they want to join as far as a cause and be active about to help prevent and all these things. People pick and choose. And we also know a lot of people don't get active in communities until something bad happens to either them or somebody that they love.
Yeah, that's true. But we also know that people been knowing about malaria for a long-ass motherfucking time.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, look, I mean, we're not excusing them. I'm just taking a roundabout way to remind you that people are stupid. So.
No, I get you. And it's understood and appreciated. I got it.
I mean, because it's we all do things that we know we shouldn't do. Like, you know, we all may eat stuff and ingest stuff or do stuff, have these habits and stuff that we know we shouldn't do, but we still do it. Now, some people do things that are way more detrimental to themselves than others. So you have to be able to look at the degrees, but all in all, we all do things. So it's a look in the mirror to, all right, these are things that I need to change, these are things that I need to fix. But as a whole, being able to look at this, we need to understand that, once again, environmentally, if we don't get serious about it, then we're going to see a lot of changes for the worse in the environment, and it's going to be bad. You don't want parasites multiplying while the bees dying.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. So, anything else you want to add to this one, man?
Nah, ain't no point in beating a dead horse.
Right. Yeah, I'll make sure you all keep an eye on this, because it's spreading, and it's spreading fast. All right, so this next story. All right, so what state is this? What city and state? This is Canton, Michigan. Elementary school in Canton, Michigan. They put the little black boy name in it, but they didn't put the little white boy. So basically, this white boy at school, and he's playing dodgeball. So apparently the white boy has issues with his head. And they're charging the black boy with aggravated assault because the white boy got hit in the face with the dodgeball. And the white boy's mother is saying that before this particular dodgeball game, her son has been targeted, and he has a medical condition, and they're saying he allegedly suffered a concussion from the dodgeball game. Bullshit. So she said her child was hit in the face twice with the ball previously due to this. So she's saying before this incident, he was hit in the face twice. So just saying he had a black eye and a bruised nose from this particular incident. So the mother pressed charges. The little white boy was cool. The little white boy says, and I quote, no, that's not his quote. But the little white boy was like, "Mama, I'm cool. It ain't that serious. We still going to be friends." But the mother went ahead and pressed charges against the little black boy. Here it is. He said, "Mom, it's okay. We're still going to be friends." So, I mean, what the hell is going on between the sheets in America's home other than racism, Pat? What the hell, man? So the little white boy get hit in the face with the dodgeball, which happens in the dodgeball game, mm-hmm. by the way. And the little white boy mom is mad, and she basically, from what I'm reading, she's mad that the little boy been getting picked on, and this time she's had enough. Even though he just got hit with the dodgeball, she's going to take it out on whoever hit him with the dodgeball. So, the fuck, man?
Go ahead.
I don't know. I'm just finished. I don't know.
First off, if the little kid had a medical condition, he shouldn't have been playing dodgeball.
Bam.
Let's start there. Like, that's the obvious point.
And he plays dodge. Apparently, he plays it regularly.
Yeah, but the obvious point to be made here still is, if your child has a medical condition where they can't be hit in the head with balls of any kind, then they shouldn't be playing with balls of any kind.
Right. No. Right. But then, you know, my exclamation on that was echoing what you said. But he plays dodgeball. I want people to understand this. He plays dodgeball regularly.
And like you said, when you play dodgeball, especially if you ain't good, you tend to get hit everywhere, head included.
Right.
Even if the little boy wasn't aiming for his head, little boy could have been aiming for his stomach and the kid ducked and put his face right in the way of the ball. You know how many times I've seen that on the dodgeball court?
Man, you can't expect no goddamn 10-year-old to have no damn aim.
But I just throw the ball. Well, that's true, because they generally just throw the ball in your general direction.
Adults don't have aim. There's the rare athletic kid who got the hand-out coordination that has aim. It ain't every kid.
So honestly, if this little black dude has the aim and accuracy to hit your moving son in the face with the ball twice, that's a baseball pitcher that stand out if I ever seen one. Yo, his hand-out coordination is immaculate, and his ability to get the ball where it needs to be quickly is also immaculate. That's a future Hall of Fame quarterback.
Come on, man. You can't. Come on. So it wasn't assault the other times he got hit, but it's assault now? The little black boy hit him?
Man, yo,
now it's assault, but it wasn't assault. Any other time he playing dodgeball, but now it's assault.
This makes me think of when I see all those pictures on Facebook of people that, you know, it'd be like a black kid and a white kid playing together. And somebody will inevitably caption it. You see, racism is taught. It's not a learn,
right.
You know, it's not a natural. And I'd be like, no shit, Sherlock. We get that. But y'all acting like you posting this picture is going to stop that white kid's parent from teaching them racism. Motherfuckers be acting like just because black kids and white kids play together that they're doing something new. Never mind the fact that slave kids and white kids played together, even during slavery. Y'all ain't doing nothing new by having your black kid play with a white kid. There is nothing new happening there in
the
history of history.
Don't understand. That's the angle that people don't understand. That I ain't gonna say it make me mad, but I just see that they don't understand, because, like you said, what's happening is not new. America, the way America exists and behaves, this shit ain't new. Name me a time in American history that white people like black people. Your ass can't.
Right.
So get off the bullshit, black people. We know racism is taught, but guess what? It's also deeper than this shit is deeper than racism. Like we was talking the other day. I wasn't talking to Pat, but I was having a conversation with somebody else and explaining to them that, remember, slavery existed before racism. Matter of fact, slavery existed thousands of years before racism. Even though, and the form of slavery that existed was indentured servitude, but nevertheless, slavery existed. Now, racism was created to help explain chattel slavery. So, white people it ain't just our skin color. That is a factor, but that's not the big factor. It's a domination thing. It's a power control thing. White women strikes again. This is a case of the white woman strikes again. And this time she struck at a 10-year-old boy. So black people have to start thinking twice before they, quote-unquote, put their children in better schools, in better situations. And just like with the Civil Rights Movement, black parents intentionally put their kids in terroristic situations. Don't intentionally put your kid in a dangerous situation.
That's always kind of been my kid. I understand you want your kid to get the best education possible, but at what cost? You know, at what point do we say enough is a goddamn enough? I'm going to work with the schools in my own community and make those schools better for all of the black kids that can't afford or don't have parents that are able to or even thinking about sending them across the tracks to a white school for a better education. Because, and then even to that, what qualifies it as a better education? Like, because your kid is getting more heavily indoctrinated. They're getting a massive superiority complex being developed within them about how they relate to their own black peers. You got all of these other issues happening in addition to them having good textbooks and good working computers, all of which, while nice and do make the educational environment a lot more pleasant and learning friendly, are not necessary for providing a high quality education. You know, in addition to all those other things, you have to deal with the added culture that your kid is coming home with and being exposed to, and the potential for terroristic activities and behaviors against your kid because of their skin color. Like, I don't understand why none of this stuff is laid out onto the calculator when people start thinking about sending their black kids to white schools. You know, we talk about this all the time because I'm always talking about how I heard the story of the lady that one of the kids that integrated the schools in California, and how her brother walks with a cane because they cut his Achilles tendon, how she sees black spots because she got shot in the face with powder, with out of powder packed into a shotgun, and how, like, all of these things were happening to them. They literally got abused and mutilated to the point where it's had lifelong consequences for them.
Yeah, was it worth it though? Was it?
Right.
Was it? Is it? Is it worth our sanity overall and health overall to be around white people?
Cause,
is it really worth it? Now, we're not saying that every white person we can't be around, but what we are saying is, if you put your child, your black child, in predominantly white situations with predominantly white faculty and staff, it's a good chance your black child gonna have problems.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, I'm the first one to tell you, like, and we're talking about culture, and that's something you always have to define, or you have to clarify. We're talking about a culture, a system, an institution. We're not talking about individuals. So,
right.
Yeah, you can have your white friend. And black. I got white people that I know that I think are cool. Several,
I fuck with white people all the time.
There are plenty of cool white people out there. But when we start, and they understand this, when I start talking about white culture, I'm no longer thinking about or considering you as an individual. I'm considering your culture as a collective and what it does to people of my culture. And you
and
can
be
cool and still be a part of a fucked up culture.
And let me add a piece to that. The same way that is looked at when we're talking about male dominance and male privilege as a culture over women. So the same way that's looked at, that's the same way that white supremacy as a culture and racism as a culture is over black people and the rest of the people of the world.
Right. And it's just that, and you got to consider the cultural ramifications of surrounding your kid with white people. You got to consider what sort of impact that's going to have on your child emotionally, socially, psychologically, culturally, and eventually economically. Because even though, and when I say economically, there is going to be a price to pay for having to deal with a lot of the things that just come with being in a minority situation where you're surrounded by people that don't look, think, talk, or act like you do. There's going to be a cost to pay. So even if you make a lot of money, you still might end up paying that cost in a shortened lifespan. There was a study done by Harvard years ago that said black people on average live 7 years shorter than white people, due specifically to the effects and the stress of racism. So, you know, you're thinking about stuff like that. Or maybe they live a long life, but they deal with self-esteem issues because they don't believe in who they are, what they accomplish, or their culture, or they're down about being black. They want to be anything but black. They're not confident in who they are. Like, there are a lot of other ways to pay those costs. There are a lot of other resources, intellectual and emotional resources at stake when I began talking about economics. So I'm not only talking about finances, I'm talking about resources as a whole. What's going to be the cost of surrounding your kids with people like that? And is that cost worth it? For some people it is, for others it isn't. For me, I would just as soon get involved in my local schools and in educating black people and making that better.
Now, on the other end, this family need to get a good lawyer. Ben Crump, where you at, or whoever, this family needs good legal representation, because they're trying to give this white mother is really trying to give this, and this is further explaining white culture, white racist culture. This mother is trying to give this boy a record at the age of 10 for innocently participating in a game. Because like you said, like we said earlier, your son shouldn't have been out there if he got these medical conditions. And you worry about him getting hit in the head, and he can't get hit in the head. He shouldn't be playing dodgeball. And he plays it on a consistent basis. But just this particular time when the little black boy hit him, now you want to call assault. Once again, going back, echoing everything Pat just said about racist white culture. So this is her saying, okay, I'm going to get what I want. And me getting what I want calls for this boy getting arrested. And he getting arrested. And I think he was suspended. I think he was suspended as well. That's crazy in itself.
Think about the game being played here, though. The little white boy says, "Mom, it's cool. We still going to be friends." And a lot of people are like, "Oh, that's great." How many little white kids during slavery said, "Mom, why can't I go outside and play with John or play with whatever?" And she said, "No, you can't." "Well, why not?" "Because blah, blah." You know, you don't know what answer she's going to give him this day and age. But you do know how she feels, because her son was like, "Nah, Mom, it's cool. We going to be cool. We friends." And the mom was like, "Fuck that shit. We charging him anyway. I'm pressing charges anyway." So think about the game being played there. Now, assume she drops the charges and the two kids go back to class together. Think about how the black kid is going to experience this entire endeavor. And think about, from what we know about black culture, how that black kid is going to be educated to deal with that white kid from now on. That black kid, not only is he going to be a little bit more timid around that white kid nowadays, or after the fact, if they continue going to school together, but he's also going to be sympathetic and apologetic to that white kid for the experience. Hell, yeah. he might even go up to the white kid, even after all of this is done. I know he apologized once for hitting the kid in the face, according to something I read. But he might go up to him again, even after the fact, and apologize to him again, with the white kid offering no apologies for his family almost ruining, and this is assuming it gets thrown out because of public backlash. The white kid, I can almost be assured, and if it does happen, I will be surprised, will not go up to that black kid and apologize for his parent almost ruining that child's life. And the parent most certainly will not go up to that black kid and apologize for almost ruining his life. So think about the game being played there psychologically for this black kid going through this, where you had to apologize for playing a game with a white kid. And now, you know, you're going to be educated, especially if everything goes away. You're going to be educated to be grateful and thankful that they dropped the charges. And you should be nice, and you should continue to be best friends with this kid. Not saying you shouldn't be nice, but I am saying you should be
side-eyeing that little white boy.
You shouldn't be best friends with him. You shouldn't be especially not while he's 10 years old, still living in the roof under the roof of a mama who just tried to press charges against you. So I'm just saying, think about the psychology of what this little black boy is about to go through.
No, I'm with you, but the little black boy's mother has to understand your child went through a traumatic situation, but also she has to help him understand what's going on, talk to him about it. I hope she's aware enough of what's going on to get him to understand that he don't have to apologize for anything. because he didn't do anything wrong but be black. So she has to explain that to him. And if she don't explain that to him, everything you just said is going to manifest. Even if the little white boy is still apologetic, the black boy learned his place.
Right, and that's essentially what's happening here. The black boy is learning his place. And the sad part about that is black parents far too often encourage the lesson by teaching acquiescing and teaching, teaching, and I just had the word on my tongue that I wanted to use, but I feel like the message has been conveyed. We teach, in these situations, we teach our kids to back down. We instruct them to bow out. We instruct them to be to display humility and to display graciousness in defeat and to display a beautiful surrender. All of the other different words you want to use to spell out, we teach our kids to be submissive to white wills.
Yep. And it's time for that shit to stop, because we ain't second to nobody. So, we got another story that's going to make y'all mad as shit. So, this young lady in the state of Kentucky, her child was basically kidnapped from her by the state of Kentucky's Child Protective Services, and her child died in Child Protective Services at the foster person's house of neglect. The child was doing good when she was with her mother, and the child was born with birth defects, and the mother noticed that her daughter's condition was worsening as she spent more time in the foster care, and the young girl eventually ended up dying in the hands of the foster people. And they even went to the extent of trying to blame the mother for the daughter being born with birth defects with no real evidence. So let me read you a little bit. Charity Lewis took to social media early this month, in this month of July, to tell her story about how Kentucky CPS medically kidnapped her special needs daughter because they did not think she was capable enough to take care of her, and now she's dead. She died while in custody of the state of Kentucky in her foster home. Charity's video on Facebook has been viewed more than 1 million times since this current article has been published. It has resulted in a flood of traffic. So, it says, it's basically a 6-year-old special needs daughter, Demaya, was taken to a pediatrician on September 21st because she wasn't looking too well. The pediatrician examined Demaya and said she was okay, but I know my child, I knew she wasn't okay. This is what the mother wrote about what was going on. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I want to try to get good details. On September 22nd, 2018, I personally rushed Demaya to the ER. Tests were done on Demaya, and the results came back showing Demaya was having heart failure. Child Protective Services were called when Demaya was being discharged from the hospital. I don't understand why. When the caseworker arrived, I was told they were called because they feel like I was neglecting Demaya. Lord knows that was not the case. The caseworker told me she didn't feel no need to take Demaya. She just wanted to do a home visit every now and then. I was okay with that due to the fact that I could take care of all my children and make sure I get to Maya her medication every day. The next day, I received a call from a new caseworker. She asked me, can she stop by to look at my home to see where Maya sleeps? I had no problem with letting her come by because my home was nice and clean like always. The caseworker walked through my home and seen nothing wrong. After she walked through my home and found nothing wrong, she then stepped out on my front porch and made a phone call. She was whispering. I found that very suspicious. She walked back into my home and said she was temporarily taking my child. I started to cry and asked her why. She told me she felt like that Maya was being neglected. The caseworker in the state of Kentucky accused me of my daughter being born with special needs. This broke my heart completely. Maya was born with a cleft lip and palate, growth deficiency, coloboma in both eyes, she also had a heart murmur and was on multiple medications she had to take for the rest of her life to keep her alive. I never drunk or did drugs while pregnant with Demaya. I made sure I gave Demaya her medication every day. Demaya was never supposed to be taken off her medication. On her visits, I was told Demaya no longer needed to see a cardiologist. Listen to the doctor. She was no longer needed to see the cardiologist, and she was doing 100% better and taking off the heart medicine. But every time she see Demaya, she looked worse and worse. Demaya's lips were very chapped and blistered. Her cheeks were extremely red due to dehydration. Her hair was matted on her head. Her eyes were running full of crust. She also had strep throat because the mother could smell it on her breath. Demaya's face was covered with scratches, and she had bruises on her arms. Demaya had never had a coat in the winter, and her clothes were never up to par. My baby was being neglected by her foster mom. I gave Demaya a cup of water, and she drank it within a split second. I complained about my daughter's condition, and it was documented that I have all the documents for every visit I had with Demaya. I brought Demaya shoes and clothes to take with her, and she's never seen Demaya wear those. Every now and then, she saw Demaya was looking worse and worse. She knew something was going on in the home that Demaya was in. She was never told the woman's name that was caring for her daughter. They never told her for some reason that she found she was fighting for her daughter's life. Demaya was taken in September. She only seen Demaya 7 times. She was supposed to visit her every 2 weeks, but that changed to once a month. The foster mom kept pushing the dates back where she could visit, and Child Protective Services wouldn't help the mother. She felt her child was in danger. The last that she saw her child was May 15th of 2019, the day after her birthday. She made promises to her baby that she was going to come home and everything was okay. July 1st, she received news that her baby had passed away. She was gone. So, the social worker who took the child out of the home was fired, but damage had been done, and basically her daughter was taken. But she wasn't given a real reason other than they felt like the daughter wasn't being taken care of, but they had no evidence, no proof, no backing or anything, and the daughter died. So, this shit made me mad, Pat.
Yeah. Sound like it should.
Like, damn. So she need legal representation. But so as I was reading, a thought popped in my head. And I'm not saying this as in she should have done this, but if a lawyer would have been reached, because this article doesn't say if that happened or not, but if a lawyer would have been contacted and reached out to or obtained early in this process, do you think it would have played a part in helping her retain her child?
I think it couldn't have hurt. And again, I don't know if she reached out to a lawyer or not, but I do know that pride is a motherfucker, and a lot of black people, not accusing her, but a lot of black people do experience a lot of shame in being in these situations, and we don't necessarily reach out to the help that we know we need and we should have. And so if that is a part of what happened, if she did not get legal representation for whatever reason, I feel like it definitely couldn't done anything but make matters better.
Cause she was jerked over. So they think she's not taking care of her daughter because the daughter is having issues with her heart, but the daughter has medical conditions. She was born that way. So they hint at the fact that they think the mother is the cause of the medical condition. Of course, cause she's a black mother, right? Cause all black mothers, you know, neglect their children, right? But so what happens to the foster mother? Because it doesn't really get into all the information. So do the foster mother get charged with the crime or anything? Because clearly the foster mother neglected the child.
Yeah, that much is definitely obvious.
Because, I mean, the child went from good health to death within a matter of months. So clearly the mother wasn't the damn issue in this. Clearly. This is some bullshit. It feels like this is some white women strike again bullshit. Now, I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know. Because I don't know what race the social workers and things. I'm just going by what it sounds like. But If a sister did this, she need her ass whooped.
Well,
But
even if a sister had done it, you know, my issue on the matter is, just because a black person does something doesn't mean that it still isn't something that's motivated, spurred on, or
oh yeah, of
carried
course.
out by white supremacy, by, you know, white culture.
That's the root.
Because, you
That's
know,
at the
black
root of it.
people are
But you
just
gotta get your
as,
ass whooped for just doing it, though.
yeah, and you know, black people are just as susceptible to white culture as white people are. We are, there are a lot of black people in America right now racist against black people.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So just
Yeah.
because you're black don't mean that you're immune from the effects of white society.
It just, man, this shit's sad though, man. Cause
Yeah,
it's
no,
like
that's a sad one.
We already have our women feeling like, I ain't not all women, but there are too many
Many.
black women who feel like nobody's there for them, nobody cares for them, nobody protects them, nobody's up for them. And as a man, I don't like to hear that, even though I understand where they come from. But it's sad because it just seems like she's out there by herself. She needs help.
She does
So
need
like,
help.
so any so there's a there's a GoFundMe page. So what we'll do, what's going to happen is, go to our website and pack all the links that go out. I mean, oh yeah, all the links that go out, because the text and stuff go out when they go on the other podcast stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So can you drop this GoFundMe link in that? Let them know that they can go to this for charity to be able to help her out with a child.
I mean, it'll be in the show description.
Oh, so all okay,
you
all
want
that go
something
on there.
separate?
No. If all of that go on there, we straight then. Okay. But yeah. So it's a GoFundMe page. You can go and donate to help Miss Charity be able to bury her child and do whatever. But she needs a lawyer. So anybody listening to this who's black, who's a lawyer, know some lawyers, who know something about law, please help this young lady. Like I said, the link to the GoFundMe page will be in the description of this show. I'm looking for any other contact information. I haven't found it, but I do know that the link for the GoFundMe is there. So, in fact, let me open this link up now to see if there's any more contact information. But the GoFundMe link in itself is a form of contact. And, you know, it's like they took the daughter while she was alive, and now the daughter's gone. It's that bullshit, man. How do we stop this? How do we? And I'm not expecting you to have the answer, but I'm just saying, just how do we stop this stuff?
I mean, I have an opinion.
Yes, I mean, give that. I'm not, like I said, I'm not expecting you to solve this shit. I'm just asking for something. I just want to hear something.
I mean, in a case like this, one, we need to you know, we talk about it all the time. I feel like we truly need to stand up for each other and stand by each other. If somebody took this woman's child, there should have been a circle of people around this woman that knew that her child was taken and that were willing to go fight for her. And that means willing to even go and get a lawyer if she doesn't want to. You know, willing to have, even if it's just have somebody look into the situation. You know, but in that, I just feel like we have got to get more involved with each other, like on a personal level, not on no superficial social media connected level, but on like a real level where if something happens to you, I recognize it and I take real world steps to rectify it. I don't make a Facebook post. I don't run around talking about free my nigga daughter or none of that other stuff. You know, like I do real world activities to make things better. This whole thing could have been, you know, who knows, this whole thing could have been changed by having 10, 15 people call up social services on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, something as simple as that, just having a bunch of people, and 10, 15 people really ain't a bunch, but having a nice amount of people doing something on a consistent basis to where it just nags the fuck out of the system, but it lets the people in the system know we're watching, we're paying attention, and you're not going to be able to do anything and not have any backlash come from it. Something as simple as that is life-changing for a lot of the situations that we read up about and that we see on the news and we come across on social media. A lot of these situations could be alleviated just by putting enough pressure on the system so that the people in the system realize they're watching. Because I think a lot of this stuff happens because people feel like nobody's going to do anything. You know, that goes back to the pharmaceutical thing we talked about earlier. People are getting low-quality drugs because everybody's like, nobody's going to care. They just niggas. They just black people. They're just poor people. You know, here in North Carolina, they were sterilizing women 30, 40, 50 years ago. They were sterilizing women without making the women aware that they were being sterilized, black women. Nobody's going to care about black women being sterilized. So here, in my opinion, you have another case of a black child being a victim of the system, behaving in a way because it feels like nobody's going to care. So if you just start showing them that we do care, you know, I don't know, but I feel like this is one of those situations where just showing the motherfucker that somebody gives a damn and that this ain't just going to slide out the back door would have been enough to save this girl's life.
That's where that community comes in. That's where that community really, really comes in. Like I said, we don't have enough information right now to say what all happened on the front end. So I don't have assumptions, just opinions and hope nots and stuff that we'll talk about. But one thing that we do know is this young lady's daughter is dead. So, and we can't have this shit happen no more in our damn community, man. And we have to have that go past just rhetoric. So that's where real action, like I said, real world stuff, real action has to come, and we really, really protect ourselves. Because we see what's happening. We see what's happening. Ah, oh, man, I just hate to hear that. All right, so our last story is about another crazy-ass white boy who shot up a garlic festival. Like, how fucked up in life do you have to be to shoot up a garlic festival?
Pretty fucked up.
That's the first question. A garlic festival, the best idea you had, or you so fucked up in life that you said, you know what? I'm going to go shoot up the garlic festival. So the boy named that's the Gilroy Garlic Festival. So we know 3 people killed, 2 children killed, 12 people injured. Santino William Legan is his name. And they say he was killed by the police during the ordeal. But he shot up the place. They say people was just like, he was just out there just indiscriminately just shooting. It's like they don't know nobody know what the motive is. No, we don't know no who, what, where, when, why. We just know the how. How is, it was a gun similar to an AK-47. See, now, like a conversation we was having earlier, when it comes to automatic rifles, automatically people go to the AR-15 and all those things. We're going to get into that part of the discussion later, but just, bring that up to put that in the front of our minds. But it was a, AK-47 type assault rifle weapon. They say it was an SKS rifle. But he went in there indiscriminately and just started shooting up shit. Crazy-ass white boy. White boy strikes white. Crazy white. What we say, white man between the age of what? Like 15 and 60? You got to work. You got to keep your eye on.
Mm-hmm.
Because shit like this. Now, we was in a conversation earlier that stemmed from this about gun control. And we all know gun control in America is needed. They need to tighten up gun laws. Some people believe that certain guns shouldn't be for sale. Some of them I agree, some I disagree on certain points, not totally on either side, but I believe we need more of people control than gun control. And we have to start doing different things. Because I understand what people are saying about the gun control, because you're like, well, people shouldn't have access to this type of weapons. But my argument to that, though, is these type of people are going to kill like this no matter what type of weapon they have. Because it's the type of person, it's not the type of weapon. They're looking for the most efficient weapon available. And I do get that, but the person is still the bigger issue than the actual weapon. So in addition to gun control, when we going to get people control, and especially, and I can't say white male control because white men do shoot up a lot of things, but in saying that, I also have to be honest with myself and know that, and especially in certain neighborhoods, a lot of our people shoot up things on a regular basis. It's not mass shootings and things. It's personal shootings. But big difference, but gun control is needed, but people control is needed. But most of our terroristic things that happen in America that deal with guns on a regular basis, most often is a white boy. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. We, like you said, we talked about this earlier in one of our other groups. And, you know, I agree. We need to make sure that we have responsible gun laws in place. Most definitely. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. No questions to be asked. We need it to be harder for people to get guns. But on the other end, like, I agree with you in that, you know, we have to understand that people that murder people, people that are going to do some fucked up shit, are going to do fucked up shit anyways.
Right.
And so the question then becomes, are we limiting guns because we want to reduce the amount of people that can be fucked up by a crazy motherfucker? Or are we limiting guns because, or are we going into trying to limit gun control because we feel like that's going to solve the problem permanently? Because if you think that people not being able to buy guns is going to stop people from killing each other, or hurting each other, or otherwise murdering each other, and I know a lot of people that are pro that really do want guns taken off the market will say, well, nobody believes that. That's stupid. I beg to differ. There are quite a few people out there that honestly believe that if you do away with guns, you solve the problem in its entirety.
See, but I have to look at that person sideways because I'm like, so you do know people were getting killed before guns, right? Like, they fought whole wars for thousands and thousands of years without guns. Like, the Greeks conquered the world. The Persians conquered the world. Attila the Hun conquered the world without guns.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, people still feel like, I mean, even nowadays, there are mass stabbings in other countries all over the world. You know, like I made a comment in the group. There was a mass stabbing in China last year. There were, like, multiple mass stabbings in China.
But even, like, the point I was making about, you could take away guns. I thought of a machete. Because we, you know, you and I both know the damage people can do with machetes. As a matter of fact, we see, if you pay attention to a lot of the conflict that has happened in Africa, look at specifically the Hutu and the Tutsis. Yes, they had firearms, but a lot of the killings were done by machete. Now, like, you can do damage. You can do damage with weapons that are not guns.
You can really mess somebody up with a, you know, my karate instructor used to say that all the time. I'd rather deal with a person with a gun than be up close with somebody that has a knife or other bladed weapon, because they can do a lot more damage with that bladed weapon than somebody can with a gun in a quick span of time, where you aren't able to necessarily protect yourself or defend yourself. They can do a greater amount of damage.
Man, think about how many people get shanked in prison all the time. Because I'm just, and I say that thinking about, let's say you got this one person at this garlic festival and take away the gun and give that person a knife, and that person just go around shanking people. You know how slower people would react to it because there's no warning that it's coming?
Yeah, and the secrecy component, because I think a lot of people just think, if somebody was crazy with a knife, they'd be running around screaming and yelling and making these large chopping motions as they slash people's heads off. Well, when you think about it, if somebody really wants to do a lot of damage with a bladed weapon, they're casually walking around just poking people.
Right.
You know, you and the person getting poked knows that they're getting poked, but at the same time, they don't really know what's happening. Like, what the hell is going on? And it's not like they poking the person for permanent damage. You know, what if somebody's walking around with a knife or other shank or other bladed weapon or pointed weapon, and they just casually poking people twice and moving on to the next person? But it's a deep blade. You know, it's a six-inch blade or more going into people. Poke, poke, on to the next person. Poke, poke, on to the next person. But, you know, you could very easily stab 20 or 30 people in that environment before people really catch on to what you're doing. That's a very real possibility. So I don't understand. Now, but again, you know, I understand people would be like, y'all are making silly arguments. I get all of that. And nobody, like Joe said, nobody's saying that we're saying that guns are cool. But what we're saying is, if you take away the gun but do nothing to address the cultural violence that we have in America,
it's going
to
continue.
People are still going to be getting fucked up.
And you know, if somebody was like, this is silly, it's not a silly argument. It's a realistic argument. Shit happens over the world all the time. We're just in a gun-driven nation. But there are other places who don't have access to guns like we do, but guess what? They still have goddamn killing. They still have that.
But I also consider the fact that if somebody really wants to kill you with a gun, they're going to find a gun and they're going to kill you with it. No law, no nothing has ever gotten in the way of people doing what they want to do. And we see that all the time because laws get broken all the time. If a motherfucker really want to do some shit to you, they're going to do it. Period. And the only thing that's going to stop them from doing it is either some sort of preemptive strike on them, or you stopping them from doing it as they're trying to do it. So I think we got to come to grips with that too. Just because there's a law banning guns doesn't mean all the guns are going to disappear.
Man, they're not. I mean, man, look, guns end up on the street all the time in places where, like New York, they got the strictest gun laws. Somehow guns keep ending up on the street. Guns end up on the street in environments where people don't have the means to really buy guns. So, I mean, guns show up. Whether the people in the community bring them or not, guns show up. Let's be realistic about what goes on in this country and not just paint it from what we want. Because people be coming from an idealistic place of what they want the nation to be, not really looking at the nation. And even in that idealistic place, or thought may not even be realistic. But we have to start, like you say, addressing the culture, man. We have to address the violent nature. And like Ilhan Omar said, white men are the biggest terrorist threat to America. Hell, to the world. White men are. We all know this, but somehow most of us don't want to say this or even agree with it when they say it. It's like people turn their heads or all these things. No, white men are the biggest terrorist threat to this nation. When are people going to stop acting like that ain't true? That's true as hell. Everybody knows it's true as hell. Everybody knows. So, I mean, but it goes back to even if we take all the guns off the street, people are still going to die. So violent culture still needs to be addressed. And if we don't do that, we tripping. I mean, because think about it in another sense. We could lock up all the men who have raped before, but that don't mean rape gonna stop.
No, I mean, if you truly want to get rid of criminal behavior, you don't take away the tools criminals use for their criminal activities. You change the mind of the criminal before it becomes a criminal mind.
Yeah.
You don't stop a rapist as he's raping someone or after he's made up his mind to rape somebody. You stop a rapist before he even gets the idea to rape somebody. And we do see it being successful in a multitude of occasions because most men don't rape. Most women don't rape. But if we, you know, so, but that's where you go into the cultural argument. You know, if we can predict the types of environments that are most likely going to produce certain types of criminal behavior, then we should be able to predict what's going on in the minds of criminals as they're committing their criminal acts. So the simple solution to stop them from committing their criminal acts is to cut back or reduce or eliminate the environment or the environments that cultivate that way of thinking. I mean, it's very simple when you boil it down to that level. So if we want people to stop shooting each other in the face en masse, we need to create a culture in America that's less conducive to gun violence and aggressive ways of solving your problems, and is more conducive to empathy, sympathy, understanding, tolerance, and all of those other things that we claim that we all about that you never really see in action.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just me.
No, I mean, it's just real life, man. Real life, real things. Like, we have to really take a look at that. And, of course, when we're talking about this from an American standpoint, we, Pat and I, don't expect white supremacists to ever look at themselves. We know better than that. But for the smart, or I ain't gonna need to say smart people, for the people who claim to not be on the side of racism, we're talking to y'all. So we need to understand what's going on. One of our biggest issues in America when it comes to stopping racism is we don't understand it. I suggest you all study Neely Fuller Jr. Study Neely Fuller Jr. That's where you start. Just start with him. You're going to learn a lot about what racism is and how it came about. So that way we'll be able to better understand the mind of people like this guy. What's his name? What's the white word? Santino William Legan. Because he ain't the first and he won't be the last. And we've had, I don't know how many mass shootings we've had this year, but we've had a number of mass shootings this year. So, got to do something different.
Yeah, that we definitely do.
And let me say this, too, because I think this, in my opinion, this needs to be said so people can understand. And this goes beyond pro-blackness, pro-anything. We're talking about pro-human, pro-justice. Anybody who claims to stand against racism, I need any and everybody who claims to stand against racism to understand that it's black people's job to get ourselves from under the throes of white supremacy. It's white people's job to stop racism, but it's everybody's job to oppose the system. It's everybody's job to be a resistance against the system. And it's everybody's job to understand that working together. Now, this isn't a we are the world instance to where we put our pro-blackness and our building of ourselves to the side. This is not what that is. But this is understanding that the larger picture, and we're talking about a mass opposition to racism, that's going to take all hands on deck. And that's everybody, no matter your background, who is against racism. All hands on deck. Now, that don't mean you stop building within your own community. But what that means is we understand that we have different pictures that and different lenses that we need to be seen from. And we are a better asset to the whole when we can do for self.
Most definitely.
So that being said, and that wraps up our topics for this week's episode of Freedom Train Podcast Series. You know, the greatest podcast you've ever heard. They know it is. They know it is. Let's party shots, Pat.
Power to the people.
Hey, man, let's get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Let's do different. Let's do better. Let's make sure the future generations got a better chance than we had. With that said, man, oh, shout out to Enigma September one more time for having me on the podcast. Remember the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. To support Listeners from the Screen on Patreon, go to patreon.com/LFTS. To support the Fix Sports Podcast on Patreon, go to patreon.com/TheFix. That way you can support those platforms. Those are Freedom Train Network shows. Remember, every Monday you're going to get the Fix Sports Podcast. Every Wednesday you're going to get the Freedom Train Podcast Series. Every Thursday you're going to get Lessons from the Screen. Every Friday you're going to get the live showing of the Enigma Sept Hour. Every Friday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Enigma September YouTube channel or the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Amen. This is Media Design. To free your minds. Two fingers in the air like a souffle. You know, you just don't care. We will holler.